From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. In case you haven't seen all the red heart decorations and TV ads for flower bouquets, today is Valentine's Day.
Are you okay?
Do I look okay?
Should we call a doctor?
No, it's this day. Christmas, New Year's, 4th of July, she's fine. Valentine's Day, not so good.
We'll spend the day talking to Georgia couples who've kept romance alive even though they work together, but we'll also talk about the challenge of being single, along with the falling divorce rate.
Do you take this woman to be your wedded wife?
Oh, jeez, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a big decision, isn't it? I mean, I wish that if I ever did it, I was going to do it once, and that was it. Well, sure, yeah, go ahead.
We would love to hear your story of love. If you want to shout out to your partner, give us a call. The number is 404-500-9457. You can also tweet us at OST Talk, and we might include your message to your loved one on the air. Let's start with a story of truly enduring love. JB and Lynette Tuttle have been married for more than 70 years. The Savannah couple is now in their 90s. They're both retired and live together in a nursing home. GPB's Sean Powers brings us this timeless story of romance.
My name is Lynette Tuttle.
And my name is J.B. Tuttle. We met in 1940 out in Garden City.
I thought he was cute. I liked his sense of humor. And I liked that he was courteous and kind. What was that song you used to whistle? At Last is our song.
At last.
At last, my love will come along. I didn't get hired to sing. My voice this week, I'm sorry. We call it our song. The wording is such that it says, at last my love will come along. Well, that fitted our relationship, so it became our theme song.
Always had a good time dancing. That was real popular back in those days. A lot of times we would dance at people's homes. They'd push the rugs back in the living room and let the children dance.
All the girls were envious because I was dating this guy that could really dance.
The night I looked at you.
Date night, usually going to Lucas Theater. At that time, the Lucas Theater, I think, was 35 cents. So you could go to Lucas Theater for 35, 35, 70, and go around to the Crystal Bell and get you a couple of hamburgers and Coke. And for a dollar, you had a good date.
We saw Gone with the Wind at the Lucas Theater, and it remains our favorite movie.
No, I don't think I will kiss you, although you need kissing badly. That's what's wrong with you. You should be kissed and often, and by someone who knows how.
Well, I suppose you think you are the proper person.
I might be, if the right moment ever came.
It had such an impact. It was a great movie, I'm sure you would agree.
I'll tell you why.
And that has remained what I would pick as my number one movie.
Well, she was a couple of years older than I am. But I thought she was real cute, and she had just graduated from high school. Of course, I was still in high school. But we started dating, got married later on in life.
He had got a pass when he got a promotion in the Army, and he called and said, I've got a pass, let's get married. Of course, we are engaged. We celebrated our honeymoon by having punch and cake, January 21st, 1944. Right, babe?
Right.
If you really love somebody, you're willing to adapt for their sake as well as your own. I thought that I would have children and raise a big family, and it didn't happen. In those days when I was fertile, there was very little to do. to increase our chances of having a child. It was a disappointment, but the Lord had made it possible for us to be happy in spite of that loss.
I tell her how much I love her, and I hope we'll meet in heaven, and I know we will.
There may be more couples like the Tuttles in the future because more people are staying married. The divorce rate peaked in the 1970s and 80s, but it has been declining ever since. We talked with sociology professor Christy Hoffman and economics professor Justin Wolfers some time back about why more marriages are succeeding, or at least enduring. Justin, maybe you could go over first what this data, I assume that it's just we've now gotten enough years behind us to create the kind of graph that lets us know what the trend is?
That's a good question. The divorce rate has actually been falling in the U.S. for a bit over three decades now. So why is it a big surprise we figure it out now? One of the problems is, you know, if you want to know how well those who got married, you know, those who got married, say, in the late 90s, if you want to know how well their marriages have fared, we have to wait 10 years to see how many of them are still around 10 years later. So it's quite a long process to actually see how different generations of marriages are turning out.
Christy, were you surprised by this particular information that the peak in divorce rates happened in the 1970s and 80s and was something of a statistical anomaly?
No, I don't think it was surprising that it peaked then. We had a lot of social changes that occurred that really fueled higher divorce rates, such as the change in divorce laws to no-fault divorce laws, making it easier legally to get divorced. We have women's employment rates increasing, giving women options. And when they're in bad marriages, the stigma associated with divorce started to decline. So I think there were strong social changes that really sort of helped fuel that uptick in divorce during those decades.
So, Justin, how do you interpret these numbers then? Are we now returning to a normal, or is there something pushing the divorce rate down?
The way I think about it is I tell a story about my own family, actually. So my grandmother got married to my grandfather in a very traditional marriage, and they stayed married together forever. The world has changed since then, and some of the social changes Christy was talking about means that the right partner for me is very different than the right partner for my grandfather, and I've looked and I've found someone who's quite different. And so I'm now in a relationship that's persisted for 17 years. My mother, though, this is the generation who are, you know, coming of age through the 70s and 80s, she initially married the right man for what she thought the world was, this being she thought she should look for the same sort of man that my grandmother had looked for. And instead, she found herself in a very different world with a whole lot more opportunities. So she found herself with the wrong bloke. And so my mother and a whole generation of people like her separated. That's why we saw the divorce rate spike. And what we're seeing now is a return to the next generation understand how the world has changed, how marriage has changed, how gender models have changed, and they're partnering appropriately for the different world that we're in.
And Christy, I wonder how the some of these current trends are feeding into the lower divorce rate now. For example, are people waiting longer to get married and that tends to end up with better choices? Are people more likely to try to work through issues, or am I making this up?
No, I think you're right. I think that there's clear statistical data to suggest that people are definitely marrying later. And I think that does work to their advantage in the sense that you're much more mature, maybe better able to handle the responsibilities and the demands of marriage today. So I definitely think the creeping up of age at first marriage is definitely having an impact, and a positive one, I think, in terms of lowering the divorce rates. Also, cohabitation is really dissolving probably some poor matches before they even marry. And it's pushing, you know, as people marry later because of oftentimes when we talk to people and ask them why are they waiting, they say they want to establish themselves financially, get their schooling done, get a good job. And so I think that these people then are entering marriages perhaps not just more responsible, older, wiser, but also more financially stable. And I also think that as he mentioned, this idea of egalitarian gender roles, I think people are Young people in particular are much more intentional. They're waiting for until they think they're ready to make the commitment that marriage requires. They still value marriage, but I think they're just making a much more careful, thoughtful choice. And they're working harder, probably a little bit, possibly, maybe, to stay together. Because maybe of having experienced the consequences of a divorce as a child from the previous generation, maybe that is making people a little bit more careful, thoughtful, and intentional.
And there's a lot of qualifiers, maybe, perhaps, somehow. But, Justin, I wonder what we can see going forward. I mean, for the marriages that are occurring today, 10 years from now, are we going to see this trend continuing?
So far, you know, these are early days, but so far it looks like, you know, those who got married in the 90s are getting divorced at a lower rate than those who got married in the 80s. And we have early data for those who got married in the 2000s, and they're getting divorced at a lower rate than those who got married in the 90s. So we're not back to sort of the old leave it to beaver style of family stability by any means. But it looks like the trend towards declining divorce is continuing.
So what is the chance now? It used to be that one in every two marriages would end in divorce. What's that rate now?
It's probably a little bit more than one in three.
But,
you know, we're not going to know this for another 50 years until the folks who are just getting married now, until we see how their marriages turn out.
That's still kind of high, though. Right, Christy?
Well, it is definitely high, but I think it is lower, and I think it represents a good positive trend for families, and that I think also there can be sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think we need to get the word out that marriages are lasting. Many people do have successful marriages. I mean, one of the things we know is that divorces are not randomly distributed in the population, so some people are at greater risk for divorce and some people at lesser risk, even though that that sort of one in three or a little greater than one in three is a nice, easy number for people to understand and think about, particularly given the old number of one in two.
That's Christy Hoffman. Go ahead, Justin.
I just want to give you another way of thinking about that one in three. I've got a very sad fact for you. All marriages are going to end, and they're going to end either in death or divorce. A lot of what's happening is medical progress means a lot fewer are ending in death. And, you know, if I get to choose between death and divorce, I know which one I'd choose.
And on that note, have a great day. That was Justin Wolfers. He's professor of economics and public policy at the University of Michigan. And Christy Hoffman teaches sociology at Roanoke College. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Coming up, if you're looking for love in Atlanta and you're female, you might have a tough time. This is On Second Thought.
Head underwater and you tell me to breathe easy for a while. The breathing gets harder, even I know that. Made room for me, but it's too soon to see if I'm happy in your hands. I'm unusually hard to hold on to.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Finding love is never easy.
Look, I'm not a cool guy or anything, okay? I haven't been on a date in 12 years.
But I would love to waste your time for a couple of hours.
What do you think about that?
It's even harder when the demographic odds are stacked against you. The Martin Prosperity Institute analyzed census data and found there are roughly 80,000 more single women than single men in Atlanta. It's one of the largest gaps in the country. But we'll talk about the numbers later. First, we wanted to hear about the single scene from women in Atlanta, so we asked a couple of dating bloggers to join us. Brittany Manson writes about her dating life in the blog Alone in Atlanta. Letitia Lynch is the author of Love in the A. Brittany, were you surprised by these numbers to find out there were that many more?
I'll say I was surprised that it was as large a gap as it was. I see it out all the time, you know, when I'm out and about in Atlanta, just the ratios being a little bit more in the male's favor than in our favor, but never did I expect it would be 80,000 more single women than men.
So how do you see it? When you say you see it, like when you're at a bar, at a restaurant, there's a lot more women than men?
Yeah, and a lot of places that I go to when I'm out, it's way more women than men. And the women will be in clumps. And, you know, it'll be a guy here and there, but it's very evident. The ratios are very prevalent as far as more women to men in Atlanta.
Letitia, what about you? Do you see it as well?
I do. I really do see it. But mostly when I'm at something that's targeting, like an event targeting maybe singles, there will always be way more women at these events than there are men. I notice it when I go to professional events as well. It's very clear that there is a gap, but again, I kind of agree. I didn't realize that it was so drastic.
So let me ask you whether that makes a difference. When you're dating, is there a difference in sort of the relationship between the single men and the single women? Leticia?
I don't think that there is necessarily a difference. I think that for the women, I think that for us, it's that we're looking for the same things really that the guys are seeking, but we just don't have as many opportunities to get that.
Are there so many single women because they're choosing to be single or focus on their career? Do you see evidence of that?
Oh, man. I don't know if I agree if people choose to be single. I think that, you know, there's a time where they do just focus on their career and they're maybe not putting as much focus on actually dating or pursuing someone, you know, to date. But I don't think anyone chooses that. You know, if it happens, they're not going to turn it away. You know, they're not going to say, oh, you know what, I'm single right now. Sorry. Like, I don't think they're going to do that.
Leticia, do you agree with that?
I kind of agree. I do feel, just speaking from experience with myself and friends of mine that are also single and in the same age category as myself, sometimes you do just want to focus on work and you aren't trying to date at all. You would rather be single for a while. You've been in a relationship. Maybe you just got out of one. It was a little bit difficult. You want to take that time to recover and really focus on yourself. Maybe part of the reason your relationship didn't work is because you weren't where you wanted to be professionally. And yes, I think some people do make the conscious effort to say, I am just going to be single. However, with the statistics, I know that that's not the case of the majority of those single women. But I do know that being in Atlanta, there are so many professional people, so many big corporations here. People are really focused on their education and pursuing their career before they're focused on getting married nowadays.
So let's dish a little bit. You guys are bloggers. Help me understand. As soon as I saw the statistic, the first thought was, wow, this is a rough town for a single woman then. Is that... Is that an accurate thought?
What's funny is that I'm such an eternal optimist. I am definitely, from my perspective, I'm definitely like the Charlotte from Sex and the City when it comes to being a single woman. I have a boyfriend now, but when I was dating, I'm like, you know what? It's fine. I never have a problem meeting anyone. And my friends are like, where are you meeting these guys? But honestly, I don't think that it's rough. I feel like if you know the type of guy that you're looking for, and I'll just give a general, I'm looking for an educated man. I hope that he's attractive. I go to networking events just for work. I meet people all the time. I'm like, he's hot, you know, he's single. I think it's just fine. Yeah. I just think we have to know where to look.
But how different is all these experiences you guys are having from the experiences your parents had, for example? Oh, Brittany?
You know, when I do dish with my parents from time to time just to see, like, their thoughts on the dating scene now, and they pity us. They said, wow, you know, I can't imagine. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, the changes and the strides. I don't even know if they're considered strides when it comes to dating, but like in technology, the social media and the online dating, you know, sometimes these things can be a blessing and a curse, because with online dating, yeah, you have this catalog of people to choose from, but it also takes away the physical contact from the person and just the getting to know you, because now you can just Google someone and you can know everything that you need to know, and you can like determine within 5 seconds if you want to date them or not. You know, you don't even actually get that chance to physically interact with them anymore. And it's a difference. You know, beforehand, you know, parents, you can go to the malt shop and pick up somebody over a milkshake and that would be the end of it, you know? You know, and next thing you know, you're courting, you're dating, and you're married. Boom. And like, so, but it's not like that anymore.
Leticia, does your dating life compare with your parents?
That is funny. I'm still laughing at the malt shop. Yes, my mom and dad have been married for 29 years now. And my mom always, she and I are best friends. She talks about how she met my father and how he was like ready to get married probably within the first few months of them dating. And, you know, I hear people's parents talking about how the guy like met their father and took his time and made sure he had to, you know, come and come to the girl's house, mm-hmm, and pick her up for a date and be such a gentleman. I think nowadays, you know, when I talk to my mom about my dating life, she's like, oh, my God, I couldn't put up with that, like the social media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see all this stuff about what people are doing now. You're so involved in people's lives that I feel like people don't really have to make an effort anymore to really get to know each other, because you feel like you have some false sense of knowledge of this person's life just because you've seen them on social media. Mm-hmm. So it's just it is very, very different. And my mom is so happy not to be involved in our dating world.
Well, we're going to put this to our demographers and researchers in just a moment. But let me ask you two, you know, it used to be always the case that people would say, if you want to find a husband, go to the South, right? I mean, that's our parents and grandparents. Yeah. Is that true anymore?
Well, you know, I saw on the article with the study that now the West Coast actually has more men than women. So, you know,
you're going to move to L.A.?
I don't know if I'm ready for La La Land. You know, it's that I might not be ready for that move, but I'm not opposed to venturing out of the South to find someone, you know. Like I said, I'm still not in total belief that the numbers are as drastic as they are.
She's in denial.
I am in a little
too.
Bit of denial. 80,000? Come on. Like, really? You know?
It's a lot.
Passed 5 men on the way here. Like, I know it can't be that bad. But, you know, I'm not opposed to going on a road trip here and there, you know, outside of the South and meeting new people. So,
Leticia, is the South is the place to find a husband? Is that over?
I don't think so. My dad's a Southern guy. My current boyfriend is from Atlanta, and he's the sweetest. His whole family is very, you know, into spending time with each other. They all have the great accents. I think that if you really find a true Southern man, he will still be a gentleman. We don't. Every guy that's down here isn't,
if
you know,
him.
The
right,
type of guy that I
you've
describe.
Already said that you're the eternal optimist, so
right.
I guess we can
I am,
that
so
way.
Every you answer you get from me is going to be like, it's fine.
That's right. That is Leticia Lynch. She authors the blog Love in the A, and Brittany Manson writes the blog Alone in Atlanta. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So we've heard the stories and the numbers, but let's look at what that actually means about family structure and culture and the role of women. Philip Cohen is a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland. Hi, Philip.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back. And Angela Boswell is a history professor at Henderson State University. Good morning, Angela.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Angela. So, Angela, you're a history professor. Let me bring the question to you that I just asked. How did the culture change from the stereotype that if you want to find a husband, go to the South?
I think that you have to keep in mind that in the South, it has been predominantly rural up until World War II, and that's our predominant perception of the South. Atlanta and other large cities in the South that began growing after World War II are a different breed in that cities have always attracted more single women than single men.
Philip, I wonder how much education bleeds into this and employment, because we're seeing trends where women are actually at this point more likely to have college degrees, especially on the younger set. Does that change the alchemy of dating?
Yes, I think it really does. And the number that you started the conversation with, you know, the 80,000 more single women than men, in real life, marriage markets or dating markets are much more specific than the overall number of single women versus men. And education is one of the biggest dividers. About 75% of people who get married on the same side of the BA, no BA divide, you could say. So they're either people with two BAs or people with neither have a BA. Race is even bigger, and the numbers are much more even skewed than you were talking about when you look at the numbers by race and education. And so, in Atlanta, which is not the worst city in the country by this measure, but we did some calculations here with a student, Joanna Pepin, and I, and we found about 51 single employed black men for every 100 single black women in Atlanta. In other words, there's about twice as many single women, black women in Atlanta as there are employed single black men. So employment, education, incarceration, mortality, there's a lot of factors that go into these, and it's in some ways it's worse than you say, but on the other hand, you know, everything is local, and the people who are really involved in dating and social life will see things that we can't see at these top-level numbers.
Well, you know, Brittany Mance is still sitting in the studio with me, and she's very depressed by what you have to say, Philip. Let's go back to Angela here. Angela, I mean, part of this, I wonder how much it reflects a changing culture, and what this means for culture when we're talking about dating relationships. How much does dating and the way we date change as our culture, like, you know, advances through the centuries?
Well, of course, it changes very much. We don't have as much parental interference in our choices as we did, for instance, in the antebellum period, where parents were very involved in choosing mates and helping choose mates. But social media has definitely made a tremendous difference in the way that people interact. One of your callers earlier was mentioning, you know, Southern gentlemen with a Southern accent. Those are hard to find on social media when you're doing a match.com.
Why do you say that?
Because you don't hear their accent. You are communicating via social media in a very, very different way, and you're responding to people in a different way. Education is going to be one of those very first keys that you can get via social media that you probably would not have gotten immediately in other ways.
And one of the things, if I can jump in on that,
yeah.
One of the things that that online communication has really changed, I think, is when I say all things are local, you know, there's online local is not the same as physical geography local. So people may it's easier for people to find sort of small communities and communities of interest online that where they can meet and interact with people that they may have a lot in common with and may be able to find people much more easily, especially people who are part of smaller minorities, gays and lesbians, for example, find partners more reliably online because they're smaller in number and they can find places where like-minded people congregate. So, people may end up in a small group conversation with people from 10 different states and find somebody that they really connect with that way, too.
We're talking about single women on today's show and the reasons why they so outnumber single men in Atlanta. A recent study found there are about 80,000 more single women here than single men in this city. We just got an email from Martha, who is listening and says, Celeste, I'm listening to your show about being single in Atlanta. It's so dead on. I was single here in my 20s and 30s, and at 40 years old, I decided to adopt a baby from China and pack in the fact that I might ever meet a man. A month before heading back there, I ran into a guy I dated 8 years before. He blew me off back then, too, by the way. He started calling me. I declined, and then finally caved. A girl's gotta eat. After about 5 dates, I had to tell him I was about to adopt a baby. The relationship was not in the cards. I went to China, came home with the baby, and he kept coming around. 2 years later, we got married. He adopted Catherine. I thought you'd enjoy that story, Martha says, and I do. But let's get back to our guests here. We have with us sociologist Philip Cohen and also historian Angela Boswell. But I wanted to go to Brittany Manson because Brittany, what Philip was saying actually strikes you. Brittany Manson is a blogger. She writes Alone in Atlanta. What you were hearing from our experts here strikes you as true.
Yes. I know earlier they were talking about how, you know, with certain aspects and characteristics that people are looking for when it comes to dating, they tend to stay on the same side of the coin, like when it comes to employment or with education. And it is really true. However, I notice a lot of women, you know, who are looking for specific things when it comes to those attributes, they tend to lay up a little bit, like when it comes to certain things, like maybe, okay, I wanted the guy that I end up being with for the rest of my life to have a doctorate. But now as they see the numbers are not exactly in their favor, they're like, maybe he can have a bachelor's. Maybe that's okay.
Associate's degree.
Right, maybe, you
I
know.
I hope he's graduated high school.
Maybe a certification, you know, something like that. You know, at least he tried something. Or, you know, if they wanted him to make a certain amount of money at his job, maybe he can at least make in the range of somewhere I'm making. Or, wait, he has a job? Okay, that's great. You know, we can work with that. Like, you know, so people are really changing their quote-unquote checklist when it comes to dating because, you know, the numbers aren't in their favor anymore.
And I've done the same thing. You know, when I was younger, I had a lot more physical attributes on my checklist. Like, I wanted him to look a certain way. I wanted him to be a certain height. And I'm like, maybe I just won't wear heels. Like, maybe I could do that, you know? So I'm noticing people are becoming a little more lenient when it comes to what they want, you know, as opposed to what they need.
Brittany Manson writes about her dating life in the blog Alone in Atlanta. Coming up, our conversation about being single in the South continues. We'll look at national marriage statistics and figure out where the South fits into that picture. This is On Second Thought. All the single ladies, all the single ladies, now put your hands up, up in the club, just broke up, I'm doing my own little thing. You decided to dip, and now you want a trip, but another brother noticed me. I'm up on him, you're up on me, don't pay him any attention. Just crying my tears, here's 3 good years, here's. I'm Celeste Headlee, this is On Second Thought. We're talking about single women on today's show and the reasons why they outnumber single men in Atlanta. A recent study found there are about 80,000 more single women than single men in the city. Helping us put this in context is sociologist Philip Cohen and historian Angela Boswell. So, Philip, what we see, though, across the country is a decline in marriage. We hit a peak somewhere around the 60s, right? And people all across the board just aren't getting as married as often.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. About 1960 was about the peak of when we really had essentially universal marriage, you know, in the early to mid-20s. And, you know, that was great if your goal was getting married. But on the other hand, you have to realize that system didn't leave a lot of room for choice. And a lot of people got married either when they really weren't ready to or didn't want to, or to somebody they really didn't want to get married, often because they were pregnant. And so, there are great advantages to having more choice. Now, obviously, we're talking, you know, about and with people who are looking to get married, so it's, or find people. So it's different. But you can think about it, and there are people who are delaying marriage, and that's, you know, one of the biggest factors. The decline of marriage, a lot of it is the delay.
Right.
The great majority of people end up getting married. You know, we never know for sure in the future, but we talked before about, do people want to be single? Well, part of what women especially are doing more is pursuing their education and careers earlier, or not earlier, but before, earlier in the life course as far as marriage, so that the result of that can be great if it means that they end up having more clout or power in the relationship, or more options of later on. If they end up boxing themselves into a small niche in the market, it's not so great.
And this is something that has kind of entered our popular culture. This is a clip from the show Being Mary Jane.
I don't think I want to get married. It may not be for me. I mean, maybe marriage is just something I say I want because I'm supposed to say. You know, like I'm a damn trained seal. Ooh. Just give me marriage. I want marriage.
So, Angela, as we look historically, perhaps the pressure for a woman to get married has eased up, and that just means more women are single for that reason.
That is definitely true. In the traditionally historical rural South, there was no place for a woman to contribute economically or be independent. But with the growth of cities, with the growth of education for women, with other economic opportunities, women have the option to be single. There's a cultural pressure still to get married, but that cultural pressure is not nearly as severe as it used to be. As our other speaker mentioned, they have other options. They can delay marriage. They can make choices other than marriage instead of getting married because they're supposed to, and not always to the right person.
But you know, Philip, women are 51% of the population in the United States. So if this was all equal, if this was a cultural shift that people were kind of, you know, avoiding marriage, shouldn't we have 51% single women and 49% single men in Atlanta? Why do the numbers vary so widely in certain places?
Well, it partly depends on the criteria that people would use for who to marry. If you just look at raw demographics, the numbers are going to be somewhat close. The extreme numbers I quoted were comparing all single women to only employed single men. So it's really kind of an old-fashioned sexist view. But the truth is that there are, if employment is a criteria for a lot of people, and it is, If you are not likely to marry someone who is either incarcerated or has been incarcerated, that's a lot of people in our country these days, and especially in some communities where it's hard for us to measure because we don't have a measure of formerly incarcerated people. But those, you know, that's a challenge for a lot of people. And then we have people in the military, and you know, we have higher mortality for men, especially African American men in their younger adult years. So there's a lot of different factors, and for any small area, I wouldn't say what one thing was, but they. Last thing, men marry younger women usually, so that also skews the.
Then
the
they are missing
pool.
Out.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Brittany, let me. I want to make sure that we're not creating a picture here of a bunch of desperate single women in Atlanta running around wanting to get married. That is not what's going on here, correct?
No, that's definitely not the case. And this discussion always hits a nerve with me because. Single women are always pressured into marriage, you know.
Right.
You know, even now, like the pressure isn't as great.
How's your love life?
Right, but as soon as I go to church and I get around the older demographic, it's, you know, so when are you going to walk down that aisle? You know, so the pressure is still there, but it tends to come from the older generation. But what makes me a little, you know, upset is how come nobody ever focuses on the guy that is the same age as me and he's not married as well? Like, 20, 30 years ago, I would have been considered an old maid. You know, I'm 30 years old and I'm not married. It's like, what's wrong with you? But the same guy who has the same credentials as me, he's the same age as me, and he's also not married. He's a bachelor and he's a playboy, you know, but I'm running around, like you said, single, wanting to get married. That's not the case, though.
Yeah,
the pressure is there, but it's not as bad. And it's like your experts are saying, you know, women are taking more time to focus on other things, you know, education, career, you know, but it's still there a little.
And Angela, that's a leftover from our antecedents, right? That idea that women need to get married and we don't ask men about their married life.
Oh, absolutely. There are many things that men can do to prove that they are adults and to prove that they are functioning in society besides marriage. For women, traditionally, marriage had been the key to they have entered adulthood. They have become what they were supposed to be in society.
So before we go, Brittany, we have to talk about wildlife in Atlanta, not related to dating.
Oh, I was
going
to say, it is a jungle out there now, but I didn't know we were going to go there.
That's right. But give me another story of dating life, what kind of jungle it is.
A personal story?
Sure.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Suitable for air.
Not too long ago, you know, I met a police officer, which county I will leave, you know, unknown. And he ran my tag in order to start a conversation. And he pulled up to my car and he started giving me information about myself that he got when he ran my tag. And he asked me to meet him.
That's a little creepy.
It was very creepy, especially at 2 a.m. So he asked me to meet him at the Publix down the street. I said, sir, I'm not meeting you at the Publix down the street. I'm sorry. And so he said, well, I'm going to go pull this car over, but when I'm done, I'll be at the Publix. And he drove off. Well, of course, I did not meet him at the Publix, but I was scared the entire night because he ran my tag. So clearly he knows where I live at this point. So I usually don't tell or share a lot of my dating stories with my folks, but I did this particular instance. I told my mom, and my mom, being the true optimist, said, well, maybe he didn't have another way to talk to you. Maybe he had to run your tag in order to start a conversation. I said, no, mom, that's not what his job is for. So let's fast forward a month, and my mother calls, and she says, you know, I don't know if this is the same officer that you told me about, but I ran across a story on the news, and it made me think of you. Turns out this officer had been picking up women at the gas station across the street from where he met me, and he started ongoing relationships with them, one in particular. Well, one of his ongoing relationships wanted more, and he was not willing to give more because turns out he was married with children, and he was having relations with these women while on the job. And so the woman was not settling for that, and she went to his commanding officer and told him what was going on. They talked to the guy. He didn't admit it, but he resigned. And so I looked at his
boy,
picture.
Boy, if you needed evidence that it is a jungle out there,
yes.
There you go. That's Brittany Manson. She writes the blog Alone in Atlanta. We've also been speaking with Philip Cohen, a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland, and Angela Boswell, a history professor at Henderson State University. Philip, Angela, Brittany, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now let's get back to a story of romance that is working, literally. This couple lives and works together. Peter Mavrogiorgis and Blake Olmsted are the creative force behind the band Twisty Cats. They moved to Savannah a few years ago from New York. By day, they run a recording studio. By night, they perform what they call electro-gothabilly psych-punk pop. And I asked them what that is.
Oh, it's nothing in the end. It encompasses so much that it's self-nullifying, but we do employ a drum machine. So that's the electro part. I have a history of playing with Memphis bands with a fellow named Tav Falco, who's a sort of a underground Memphis luminary. That might be the rockabilly part. And psych, I guess, what is that? Are we psychotic or are we psychedelic?
But a little bit of both. And then the pop is our way of trying to be a little bit more mainstream.
No, it just describes just Blake's peas when she's talking into the mic. So,
love my peas. I married a pea, Peter. I woke up pissing off my bed. And I don't know what was going on in my head. Twisty Cats are a real thing, right? This is where you got the name of your band?
Unfortunately, they are.
Yeah.
There's a woman in Texas who breeds what are deformed cats. And I remember we were poring over websites that had to do with people who were pro and against these cats. And one of the arguments that I loved was that it was humans who developed something as useless as the pug. So, of course, if humans can breed a dog and force it to be something so just strange and for our pleasure only, really, then of course it makes perfect sense that someone might breed cats with short forelegs who must hop like kangaroos. Too close to a monster. People avert their eyes when they look into a monster. And the thing that keeps you up at night. And the thing that keeps you up at night. And that's what they are.
And you chose this name for yourselves because...
Maybe we are those cats.
Exactly. We're a little twisty.
So why Savannah? I mean, you moved from New York, which many people would think either New York or L.A. are the place to base a band, especially an eclectic band like yours. So why did you stay in Savannah?
Peter?
Well, the traffic's better here.
well, there's that.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
It's beautiful. The biggest challenge for us in New York as a recording studio was the fact that the industry doesn't really support the sort of real estate prices that you'd have to pay in New York and in order to have a recording studio. That you know, we've sort of outpriced ourselves in New York, and as a result, a lot of studios are looking for other places, and Savannah's a beautiful city. It's got a lot of culture. There's a laid-back atmosphere, which we really sort of
needed.
So many years in New York City. I spent 21 years there myself, and you never really get a break in New York.
When you know, as Peter was saying, when we moved here, we weren't even thinking about the band. It kind of went on the back burner. We moved here to relocate the studio, and that, you know, we really spent the first, we've been here for 5 years, we spent the first, you know, 4 years basically growing that, and, you know,
just being here and kind of being on our own schedule, we finally had the time to kind of pick it back up.
Oh, we don't have the time.
Well, we don't. Well, we've made the time. I mean, yeah. We live together. We work together. We have a freaking studio that we can record our stuff in. And you know, it's also a rehearsal space. So, and, you know, I mean, Savannah is such a small yet really strong and supportive music scene. And, you know, we all help each other out. And New York, obviously, I mean, it goes without saying, it's completely oversaturated. Everyone's in a band, and it's hard to find a recording space. It's hard to find a rehearsal space. It's hard to book a show. So it's just a lot easier. And so, yeah.
So what do you know, there's a lot of people who say teaching can, like, let's say you teach English. Many people say that can be both a blessing and a curse. Like, it keeps your skills honed, but it takes your time away from writing. And I wonder if that's similar to your experience also running a recording studio. Like, what do you learn from the experience, and does it also kind of keep you from doing music yourselves?
Well, I don't think that we're going to make a living doing our music right now. So I think everybody who's doing something a little different or bizarre or whatever it is that we do, I think that they all have to sort of contend with the fact that they have to eat, and it requires money. So I think everybody feels like they're sort of leading double lives as far as having a recording studio, and I feel like I'm mentoring young bands here because the majority of them are young, and maybe they're giving us a little bit of a boost and mm-hmm. and a little bit of inspiration. Maybe we're teaching by example.
Who
knows?
We're a little bit older than a lot of the other Savannah bands.
The other thing that occurs to me when I was reading up on you guys is, you know, marriage all on its own is pretty hard. And I wonder how much harder it becomes when you're also working together all the time at your recording studio and then at night in a band.
That's the easy part.
The band is definitely the easy
part.
That's our
leisure. That's...
Yeah. No, it's that. Honestly, for me, I kind of feel like it's almost like our couples therapy. It's me, really, because, yeah, I mean, owning a business together is super, super stressful.
Oh, God.
we did finally learn how to separate, you know, the office and studio from our home life. I used to not be able to do that. Peter kind of forced me to, you know, the second we come home, we're home and we're a couple and we make dinner. And
you don't talk about work?
We do only in the mornings over coffee when we're both feeling really good. And, you know, first thing in the morning is always like anything's possible.
We discuss our strategies. For not getting defeated by the day so that we could make it to dinner.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, it's all of these together have definitely made us stronger, for sure. And, you know, having the band has really made things better for us. So,
Peter Mavrogiorgis and Blake Olmsted, they're married and they run a recording studio in Savannah, and they both play in the band Twisty Cats. That's our show for today, but remember, we want to help you shout out to your special someone, if you have one. Call and leave a message at 404-500-9457 or post on Facebook.